My father, who was a writer and an actor, started university in San Diego, and in his freshman year, the acting department was doing Camino Real. And he only worked as a stagehand, but it made an indelible mark in him and gave me his dog-eared copy 5 years ago. And he said, I think this would be a really good ballet. And I read it because I still listen to my father.
That's nice to
and,
hear.
I put it down because I thought, oh, I had a reaction that many people have the first time they read this play. I thought, I can't find a way in.
In fact, New York Times senior theater critic in the early 1950s, Brooks Atkinson, didn't know what to make of it either.
The only people who did know what to make of it back then, and pretty much every time it's put on, are the artists, because they can recognize the poetry within the play. But he kept pushing me, my father, and he said, I think you need to pick this up again. So I did a year later. I was home in San Diego visiting, and I said, okay, I think I found this way in. I want to talk about this with you. And I said, because this play is of a surreal nature, expressionistic, surreal, tons of metaphor, analogy, I think I have to anchor in the characters. And I think I found the five characters I need to anchor into. And he said, go on. And I said, well, it's Gutman. You got your great villain. You got your villain right there. And then you have these two love stories. You have this eternal love that takes you through time of Marguerite and Jacques. They go through all these, and even within the play, they go through it together. But they resolve, and they never leave each other. Then you have Kilroy.
Kilroy's the everyman.
He's the everyman, and he is the hero. He's the everyman, and he is, I mean, come on, look what Tennessee did. Made him a Golden Glove prize fighter that had to quit the ring because of his enlarged heart, a heart too big for his body. So again, metaphor. He's got a heart too big and too beautiful for this world to live. But he is a fighter, and he is scrappy, and he's going to get through it. So I found these characters, and then his love interest is Esmeralda, who's a prostitute peddled by her mother, the gypsy, who has, you know, a renewed virginity every full moon, but she's never really fallen in love. And then she sees the chosen hero, the only one, Kilroy, and she finds someone who is sincere. And these are words from the play as well. But you see this even when a man is dying, and this hero that you want to root for, the underdog, beautiful hero, and this woman who will have to go back to do what she's doing, but for a brief moment in time, that love can give them the energy they need to make the decisions they need to make. They are us. And I think that was the way in with these characters. I saw myself, and as a choreographer, this is a big theme for me. If we can, and I speak of myself as audience now too, if we can connect to what's happening on stage, we will go into that story and be on that journey. And so I saw these five characters, and I said, these are facets of all of us, you know, and therefore, let's build it around this idea. And then all those beautiful supporting characters are also facets, because human beings are complex and incredible beings, and I think it all comes down to connection. I think that's why we connect to Tennessee Williams plays.
How important is the audience members' awareness of the story, of the plot, to feel the impact of the ballet?
I'm calling this piece more dance theater because we are using the text from Williams, but the all-important thing is to tell the story. And I had to go away from some of the elements of the play to tell this story the way I thought that any audience member could understand, regardless of the reading of the play or not. And that became my main focus, and that became my mantra. Am I telling the story? Am I telling the story? Am I telling a story that people will understand? Am I telling a story that people will connect to? So I kept going back to that, and I look at that play every night still.
How are the words incorporated into the dance piece?
Two ways. Sometimes I just included lines I loved, and I thought, come on, this line has to be in this ballet. And then I chose lines that help tell the story.
Now, does an actor read them?
No. No. In my last ballet, The Exile, the last premiere I did last May for Atlanta Ballet, I wrote my own text for two characters because I came from that place with Frankfurt Ballet and William Forsythe. And in Europe, text has been used within the dance realm far more than in America. And I thought, well, it's time to see it here within the ballet structure. And I always liked it in my work when I did the work and the text and the dance mixed. And I thought, again, you know, this text is a character. It has to be, it has to have a role in this play. So I rehearsed them with text. Also, I have an acting background as well. I worked with the Wooster Group and studied acting for 2 years. So I worked with them, and we had rehearsals on text as much in the beginning, as much as we did for the dance.
So the dancers speak.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
The thing is, it's not a wow. That's the funny thing. Creativity breeds creativity. And all too often, we got these categories and we put people in the boxes. You're a dancer, you're an actor, you're a painter, you're a sculptor, and that's what you do. And the point is that you open a door, just a crack. You say, why don't you try this? More often than not, you're gonna have some kind of success. Because it's about the possibility of creating an artistry. That's what art is. It's about the possibility that can be born. Yes, they are dancers first, but they also know how to communicate in other ways.
About the music, an original score has been commissioned.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Peter Salem is a British composer. He works a lot in TV and film. Call the Midwife is the current project that he's been working on for the past couple of years in London. And we met the first time in Scotland when I was making a ballet for Scottish Ballet, and he came up from London, and we just clicked immediately. And I had actually made a playlist for this ballet because I thought, I didn't know I was going to have the luxury of composed music. And Peter Salem asked for it. He wanted to see what my thoughts for this ballet.
What was on your playlist?
Goreski, Ligeti, Tom Waits, circus music, gypsy music, Philip Glass, Daniel Bernard Romain.
We're talking eclectic.
Oh, yeah. But eclectic, yet things fit. I picked that playlist because the play is eclectic. It is all over the map. And then Peter Salem's music is just, I mean, I hear it again and again. People come into the studio and they're really wowed by the music. It is remarkable. And he is a true collaborator. It's been so much fun working with him. We just have at least 150 emails and conversations back and forth about, what do you think about this? That's how I like to work. I like collaboration.
So how does the story reveal itself in the dancers' movements? And I would think the narrative here posed a lot of challenge for you.
Actually, the narrative, I saw it as a roadmap because I'm slightly synesthetic, so I can see movement in words.
Oh, that's wonderful for a choreographer, or maybe why you are a choreographer.
Who knows? I mean, words also take shape in my mouth. So things, some words don't sound right or feel right, but the words actually made it easier for me. I could see movement through the page. That gave me a framework to find the emotion in the physicality, the, let's say, explosiveness in the physicality, the melancholy in the physicality, This is my third narrative ballet now. I also did The Crucible, but narrative has made choreography easier for me. Since the beginning, I've thought about choreography as sentence structure. So I've used the ideas of punctuation and grammar actually to enhance what I think my idea of choreography is, my voice as a choreographer. So the more I knew these words and the more these words found movement in my body, and the more I understood the juxtaposition of the metaphor and the analogy and his life and all these, the more that these things got put on to this narrative that I was working with, the easier it became for me to form these vignettes of life on the Camino Real.
Well, this has been an enormous project for Atlanta Ballet and seems like enormous for you as well.
I cannot wait to see this manifest with the orchestra and the costumes and the set, but I am so loath to let it go. I don't know what I will do without this presence in my life because it has walked with me. That book, that play has been with me for 4 years. And it has been almost a balm at times when I have gotten lost in other parts or other creations. I've gone back to it for the answers. And, you know, I'm not a person that wants to be nostalgic or have regret, but I will look back on this time in my life, and it will be one of my highlights because of everything, you know, and looking back on how Atlanta Ballet and John and Arturo and the whole, I mean, the phrase "it took a village," this is it. Marketing, development, costume shop, the tech crew, this was supported in a remarkable way. I went to John the other day and I said, I hear nothing but yeses. This is freakily extraordinary.
I was going to say, how often does an artist utter those words?
Oh, never. You know, so it's, you know, if one believes in metaphysics, this is definitely things coming together to support an idea that, frankly, I am in such reverence and have such gratitude for this whole process. It's been a life-changing event.
Helen Pickett, this has been marvelous.
Oh, thank you so much.